Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Figure. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the trawler, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
Good to go.
Good to go. Well, I've been good for the last half hour.
Well, I know. We sometimes stumble into this in such a relaxed manner. I'm not sure you're ever entirely with me. But this is take two, courtesy of the
with you.
Technical issues that we've had this morning.
Yeah. But anyway. In other words, our techie messed up big time, yeah.
I'm Richard Keys.
And I'm Andy Gray.
And this is Keys and Gray, the podcast. Properly into the business end of the Euros now. I've said every week and I've said every time I've been on air, I've really enjoyed it. Been loving it in the BN studios. There's a picture on online, I know, some notable football figures, Andy, that we've been in the studios with. And I think enormously grateful to the boys, Peter Schmeichel,
absolutely.
Marcel Desailly,
Gianfranco,
Rudolf,
yeah,
Robbo and Jason.
Yeah.
It's really been extraordinary. Martin O'Neill, of course, joined us last week on the podcast. Thoroughly enjoyed
Detective
spending time
O'Neil,
with him as well.
Detective O'Neill.
yes, he has a fascination with criminology. And if you missed it, go back and take a listen. It really is well worth it, I promise you. This is the housekeeping. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Keys and Grey Pod. Do follow and subscribe on whatever platform it is you choose to download your pods from. Now, we have a competition at this time every week. We have listeners, Andy, to this podcast from all over the world.
We'd like to give a
shout to a particular place where figures have spiked across the last week. And here we go.
Are we trending?
I don't think you've got a cat in hell's chance of coming up with an answer to this, but I think our guest might quickly come in when I start to offer you a few clues.
Okay.
I am called the City of 1,000 Spires.
Stockholm.
I have a medieval astronomical clock.
Copenhagen. No, it was last week.
I have cobbled stone streets.
Glasgow.
The Charles Bridge is a landmark.
Charles Bridge?
Mm-hmm. This became the home of the Kings of Bohemia, a seat of culture and art, which is where I thought our guest could come in. I'll explain more.
It must be Scandinavia.
No, I'm Prague, the capital of the Czech Republic. Who at the time of recording are set to take on Denmark.
Denmark, right.
In the quarterfinals
of
the Euros.
That's the only reason he may have got
it. So welcome to our listeners in Prague and the Czech Republic.
Thank you so much. By the way, that's a beautiful city.
Yes.
Do you know what else it reminds me of?
I would guess a late night.
It wasn't a great night in my football career in Prague.
Go on.
When I got sent off in a World Cup qualifier playing for Scotland.
Anton Ondrus.
In fact, he was as big as our guest.
Yes.
He was probably twice as wide as our guest.
He did catch you. Well, you caught him.
I did get sent off.
Peter Schmeichel, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning.
We are...
I knew it was Prague.
Yeah,
but honestly...
To be fair, he was mouthing to me. Prague.
I, I just didn't know if I was allowed to say anything.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah.
No.
This is.
I wanted to have the big introduction.
And you didn't.
I did. Good morning. Welcome. Oh, thank you.
The last time we sat here with a guest, Robbo aside, Paul Robinson was in for 10 minutes, which was good of him, was with Nigel de Jong. We spent the best part of a quarter of an hour talking about coffee.
Yeah, we did.
Because he loves his coffee. And so when I was getting ready this morning, I thought to myself, what would be the one thing that Peter Schmeichel could not do without in his life?
Smorgasbord.
Coffee.
Really?
Really?
It's the first thing I do in the morning. I'm very surprised there's no coffee on the table now.
I'm surprised there isn't a cup of tea.
If you'd have got here in time, you'd have found that Techie has had his cup of coffee.
Has he?
I've had my cup of tea. You've walked through the door, sat down, put the mics up and said, let's go.
No, you said, come on, sit down and let's get this done. That's a big difference.
Was it me? Are you sure it was me, Peter?
And the tone was a lot worse than what I just did.
So coffee.
Coffee.
Well, when you start talking, I'll go make some coffee and tea.
True story, right? True story. We've told it before. When we were at TalkSport on a Friday, we used to have the book club for 45 minutes between 12:15 and 1:00 when we went off air. And Andy was always at home on a Friday. We were so good, you couldn't tell he wasn't in the studio.
No, but he only had one book. That's what he refuses to tell you.
That's nonsense. There were as many books available as required, but I would take the time out to read the book as a courtesy to our guest, obviously.
Yeah.
So I knew when I started talking to our guest at 12:15, I would hear from Birmingham, and these were his headphones coming off. Because he wasn't that bothered at that point in the show. Around about 12:55, we went, well, thanks for that. Thanks for our guest today. It's been great.
Well, Peter, I did used to go in the kitchen, put the kettle on and put the radio on as well while I was in the kitchen and listen to Richard for 40 minutes.
You were listening.
I was totally listening.
Absolutely. You were not in the garden chipping.
No. I was listening, Peter, because I had to make sure I was back in time for Richard when he said thank you.
Every week I thought, oh, no, here we go. I'm slightly disappointed you said coffee. Do you know what I wanted you to say?
Football.
Music.
Oh, music. But yeah, the thing is, music is a very big part of my life, but I don't listen to that much music.
No, but you so make weird. It.
Do you?
I play it, yeah.
Which instrument?
At the moment, I play guitar.
Oh, sorry, what do you mean, at the moment?
Well, see, my father was a musician, and he obviously wanted me to do what he did. He was educated at the music college in Poland, and so he wanted me, piano is the most important instrument,
right.
So he wanted me to play piano, and I played piano all my life. I'd had lessons on many, many occasions in different parts of my life. Actually, in the busiest period when I played for United, I had lessons for 2.5 years, just around the corner from the training ground, and I was practicing and rehearsing for hours every day. Just trying to see how good I could become. And then life and football gets in the way and, you know, it just fades out. But with COVID, because there's not really that much to do, it was an opportunity to take lessons again. And I always wanted to play guitar. I played guitar from when I was a kid. Right. But I wanted to sort of see how far I could take it. And since my wife's youngest son was taking lessons anyway, and, you know, in COVID, you do it via Zoom, I started to take lessons as well. So I've been playing guitar for many, many hours since March last year.
Not bass. Tell me not bass, though. Proper six string.
Well, there's
the other
a story
night
there.
It was five.
Oh, see, there we go then.
There's a story there because...
Well, it is six, yeah, of course.
The reason I know this is I was lucky enough, I mean, an extraordinary night, Andy. Well, the night became day. I saw Peter pick up a guitar. It was five strings because one was missing. Nevertheless, I was astounded. Honestly, just pick a... It's something I've always wanted to do and never got anywhere near. I'd love to play an instrument. Can't. Won't now. But to see him just pick a guitar up and play as comfortably and as easily as you did was extraordinary. And I thought, obviously a little bit of research required. Mm-hmm. I went on Wikipedia and found your dad was a jazz fan. Was he? Was that his base?
My father was so he's musically educated. That was the training he took, and he was when he was still in Poland. He's from Poland. He was employed by the state circus, theatre, and travelled around the country in their orchestra. And then, of course, when he came to Denmark, he had to find his own way. So he started out with a jazz quartet, and then slowly all that got phased out. It's really difficult to make money. Make a living out of that, and when the kids came, and they came quickly, boom, boom, boom. he needed to put food on the table, and it changed into something else. But my father, yeah, he was a musician all of his life, and so music was a very big part of our life growing up. My mother is a music lover, absolutely. She's the one. That's the first thing she does in the morning is to put the radio on. Mm. Mm. And she will listen to music all day. She's 87 years old now. And she is going to every classical concert she can get tickets to. And she will go by herself, but she'll bring friends. That is a passion that I grew up with for music. And of course, choosing football was not so popular, you know. Well, you think back to that time and think back to where I grew up. So I am from Denmark, and we didn't have any professional league or any kind of money being paid to any athletes in Denmark until they changed the law in 1978. By this time, I am 15 years old. And here's a quiz question for you. You can ponder over there. Right. Who's the first player ever to get paid in Denmark?
Peter Schmeichel.
No.
72,
no,
did you see?
This,
right, okay, hold on, 72.
I put it to you. I think he's a World Cup winner.
It'll be
World Cup winner?
Brøndby.
World Cup winner.
Brøndby didn't even exist.
There you go.
Didn't.
Well, Brøndby was sort of like an obscure club.
Must have played for Copenhagen.
But you must be impressed that I pronounced it correctly.
He wasn't Danish. He's a World Cup winner.
No, but he must have played. He must have played in Copenhagen. No, played in Denmark.
He got signed by Herning, which is now it's part of what is now FC Midtjylland.
Yeah.
Let's keep it until the end, yes, so that those who are listening can ponder on it as well. By the way, two things.
No, 78.
78 World Cup. All right.
No. I didn't say that.
No, I said he was a World Cup winner.
He's a World Cup winner, and he got signed in 1978.
we often talk about Alexa. You refuse to go down that path.
I can't find any.
I was an early advocate. To those listening, if you want music first thing in the morning, uh-huh, I have discovered the most sensational radio station that I can imagine. Just say, Alexa, play Smooth Jazz Florida.
What?
It is unbelievable. It's not just pure jazz, Peter. It's just
learned about it now. So
pure jazz, smooth jazz, Florida. Just play that.
Trad jazz and modern jazz.
It's everything. It's stuff I'm thinking to myself, that's not jazz. But anyway, back to the subject matter. At 15, you have a choice. I can be a musician, do you, or a footballer?
No, I never had the choice of being a musician. I never good enough, never put enough effort into it. I would be practicing on the piano. I could hear my friends playing football. That wasn't the greatest inspiration to put the work in that you have to. I mean, in order to become a musician, you have to be very, very good. You have to put a lot of hours in, or you've got to have a special songwriting, singing talent that takes you above all that. That is very often a natural thing to have, but can be enhanced and perfected by training. But I think that if you can sing, you have an easier, no, not easier, but you have an opportunity to make a living. It's very difficult to make a living out of just playing an instrument. But to do so, you have to be so good.
You met one the other night, didn't you?
Oh, Christ. Gary.
Yeah.
Gary Gregg.
To the Curry
Oh,
House.
My God.
Did you do a duet, did you?
Gary.
No, you.
Came out of the closet.
He never.
He didn't.
Well,
it's about time he did, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about, I've always wondered about him.
He lives in a closet because live music in this country is banned at the moment. Yeah. So the closet is adjacent to the restaurant. So he sits and spends his time entertaining from the closet. But when he came out the other night and Peter picked the guitar up and Gary and his girlfriend, May, started to sing. Wow. Honestly, an absolute treat. And I think you enjoyed him accompanying you and vice versa, didn't you?
No, he's incredible. He's got such a powerful voice. He's Scottish.
Yeah, but he's not. So he's a Celtic fan. So
he doesn't count.
There are some minuses to be.
But it's amazing because what you got with because of the accent, the Scottish accent or the Irish accent, when you have a really talented voice and you have that kind of musicality, because of that accent, it makes the singing interesting.
Yeah, people say that about me a lot.
I've heard people say...
They don't. The first time I saw you sing Great Balls of Fire, which is your party piece,
magnificent.
You were good, but I think age has dimmed my admiration a little.
Oh, no, I've got an eclectic mix now.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I can turn to it any time.
You can go in the closet when Gary gets snapped up. I've got a feeling there's a bright future for that boy lies ahead. So, if we still haven't gone beyond 15.
No.
It wasn't really 15. It was.
Did you know you were a goalkeeper?
Yes, I knew right from the beginning I was a goalkeeper. Coach said to me after 5 minutes, "You better go on goal," because it wasn't great.
Were you a big lad at 15? Were you a big 15 or normal?
I was biggish, but not massive. I wasn't the biggest. Well, I was one of the biggest guys, but I didn't grow sort of everyone. Outgrow everyone. But I was biggish, yeah.
Right.
But I wasn't a very good player. And the coach thought, well, probably safest for everybody if he goes and
goal. That's a good decision from the coach.
About 5 minutes. It took 5 minutes.
But you see, what's fascinating for me about that is that we all, I think, did the same thing. The perhaps less gifted individual, male or female, when we played football at school, would always find their way into goal. Mm. But being a goalkeeper now, something you said when you were with us last time about how a goalkeeper can dictate the way a team plays.
Yeah.
Being a goalkeeper now is so important in a side and has become in the last 20 years surely the one position that has grown beyond any other and changed so dramatically.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I do agree.
100%. Yeah.
I think I don't think you won't stand a chance of winning anything unless you have a goalkeeper that fits perfectly into the style that you're playing. And I think that the good coaches are now looking at that, thinking, what kind of person do I need to play the way that I do? So what's been really interesting with these Euros, for instance, is to sort of see how the game has evolved from literally out of nothing. 2 months ago, everyone kept the ball, the big statistic was how many passes.
Keep
possession, blah, 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 and then wait for an opportunity. And up until 2 months ago, every team that I have watched at just any decent level, all the Premier League, some of the Championship, they could keep the ball and would pass the ball up to players who had somebody in their back and pass it. And now we see something different. We still see that, but we see it's more attacking minded.
Mm-hmm.
So players are quicker to turn the game and get the ball up the other end. The variation of the long pass and the number of crosses, it's been unbelievable.
It's been fabulous.
Now, in order to play that kind of game, we know that you cannot play a possession based game unless you commit players. Players must get into position where they can receive the ball. Mm-hmm. And it's not enough to have one option. You need two or three options every time you have the ball. That means everybody's got to move. And that's leaving spaces that can be exploited if you lose the ball. And you need your goalkeeper to be able to deal with that. Your team needs to trust the goalkeeper. So if we lose a ball and the ball goes into those areas, like a long ball up the pitch, that the goalkeeper can either come out and get the ball, or he's strong enough to face that one and one if defenders helps putting the striker on an angle. So all this is very important. But even to start that bit of the game, possession game, you need that extra man. You need that goalkeeper to, because you put pressure on a team on the last third, you win the ball, it's brilliant. But if you lose a ball in your own third, it's not that great.
No, it's not.
So therefore, you need that extra man. And that means every time that option or those options are not on, you've got to be able to put it back to the goalkeeper, even though he would be slightly under pressure. Mm-hmm. And we see this in every game. And every time it happens, I'm like, because it never happened in... that was a no-go in my time. And we've only really seen one mistake.
Yeah.
That was a freak mistake.
Yeah, freak mistake. Spanish goalkeeper, yeah.
But the goalkeeper then can... dictate, you said a goalkeeper has to fit into.
Yeah.
A goalkeeper then can dictate the way in which a team plays.
Yeah.
Or has to dictate.
Yeah. So
it's no good just having a good goalkeeper now.
Well, I was going to say, can a top class goalkeeper play at the highest level if he can't use his feet?
Can't.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you something about somebody I played with. You'll know him as well. And I thought he was, when I coached, I was Ron Atkinson's coach when I worked with him at Villa, Mark Bosnich.
Yeah.
Now, Mark Bosnich, I thought, was a terrific goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Absolutely different class between the sticks. His biggest problem was, and you know what I'm going to say, he couldn't deal with the football back to him. He was uncomfortable. His control let him down. His distribution was poor. So what I'm saying is, even though he was a terrific goalkeeper, could the fact that he couldn't deal with the football, could that stop a goalkeeper hitting the very top?
I think it, in today's football, is very, very difficult to make it to the very top if you can't use your feet as a goalkeeper.
I'm glad you said that.
But having said that, and if you're using Mark as an example here, back then, practicing using your feet was not prioritised. If you look at goalkeeping training today, half of the session is about the feet. You know, they're keeping the ball up, keeping, you know, taking part in small possession games. So I'm sure, because a lot of your talent that brings you to the very top, it's not about your physicality, it's all about your mentality. So it's a mentality to understand what you need to do to get to where you are. I know this sounds a little bit sort of, but your mentality, you have to be very, very strong, but you also have to realize or be aware of what you need to do to stay there. Mm-hmm. So if you find that you have weaknesses in your game that will stop you from being who you are, you have to work on them, but you have to identify them yourself.
How different would Manchester United be with Peter Schmeichel in goal today to the way they play with David De Gea in goal?
What kind of a question is that?
I'm not asking you to compare yourself or him to you. I'm not. I'm saying differently would the team play, which is an entirely different question. How? Okay. And I think you understand it now, don't you?
Yeah, but why didn't you ask then that then?
Well, I can't ask him that because...
No, why didn't you ask the question then?
I asked the question because we've had the conversation previously and United are different with De Gea in goal to the way they might be with Schmeichel in goal.
I think it's a different team
anyway.
Can
you explain that?
It's a different team anyway. I think there's a big difference in the mentality of the players that I played with to the players' mentality now. That's got nothing to do with Manchester United players. That's just... generational
players,
thing.
Yeah.
Development is happening slowly. So Man United's gone from being a team. So when I play, for instance, we wanted to get the ball as quickly as we could and be up the other end. Mm-hmm. We commit people all the time. Mm-hmm. But we aren't committing people in the knowledge of having people like myself in goal, Brucey Pallister, the centre half. It was Paul Parker. It was Gary Neville, of course. Dennis Irvin. Mm-hmm. So we would commit either left or right, and then the other guys would look after whatever was coming. And sometimes you had to even, you know, you had to put maybe Brucey Pally up there as well. And then you're taking really, really big chances, really big risks at the back. But they could only do that because they knew that the guys at the back had a good chance of sorting out whatever problem came our way. So it's different now.
With the goalkeeping thing, though, as Richard talked about, of course, you didn't have to deal with passing the ball in your own 18-yard box when you played. So it was much more difficult for a goalkeeper to pass it out in your day because people would squeeze up to the edge of the penalty area and say to you, well, if you're going to pass it out there, we're going to jump all over you. Whereas now, of course, the goalkeepers can get it in the 6-yard box. I mean, I see goalkeepers passing it back, goal kicks, passing it back. Yeah. So it's much more difficult.
Yeah.
Or different. It's very different, for a goalkeeper now. So it's more goalkeepers now tend to play it short than in your day because the chance to play it short was limited. I had to go down quickly and go quickly to get it out the penalty area. Whereas now, they don't. They can roll it in the penalty area and take as much time as they
can. Yeah, the team's...
Do you like that part of the game that's been changed for a goalkeeper?
I think, you know, it's an evolution on the goalkeeper's job, and I think it's pretty cool to see how well they're dealing with that. At the same time as, you know, top end, the quality of the sort of traditional goalkeeping skills, all of that is still, you know, in play. I don't know if it slows a game down a lot.
I agree. That's the one thing I don't like about it. It really does.
But I think in this respect, us who has grown up, if you can say it like that, with football, the main football, the main attraction in football is from the British Isles. We kind of like the tempo. We like this all or nothing in every minute. A tackle is, you know, it's celebrated as much as a goal.
And we was.
We will be. Well, actually, it's funny because, I go back in the day when we had people in the stands.
What was that like?
I think it was a Champions League final, and I failed to remember who it was, but that was a tackle there, and the referee, by the way, in that game was really, really good. I think they must have just had the meeting about how they were going to referee the Euros because he was refereeing like it was the Euros. He was fantastic, and that was a tackle. And of course, you've got Chelsea supporters and you've got Man City supporters there. And I'm in a corner where they split. That tackle got celebrated like a goal. And it just reminded me, you know, of...
So did Wrighties when he left you spinning.
I was just misplaced.
That was, you know, I mean, people, they talk a lot about this. I hold no grudge against him. Actually, he's a very good friend and I really, really, really like him. And that was a couple of minutes there that day that wasn't great. But I think we can all find a point in our lives where we were not great. And his conduct has just been fantastic. So
Wrighty, we love.
Yeah,
I love him.
I mean,
as
we've
well.
Spent time here in his company, and as a player, I loved his.
But do you know what?
What I saw that night was two guys that were just not giving ground.
Exactly. Yeah. And I look back at that. There was an after thing with that, which really, I mean, in the heat of the moment, he might have, you know, put a little petrol on the fire.
Oh, just a bit.
Just in the heat of the moment.
Just a bit.
It's great fun, though.
But he pulled back straight away.
Yeah.
But there were other people there pushing themselves into the limelight, you know, trying to take control, credit. I won't say any names, but... There's one guy in particular that I am very disappointed with. And thank God he's not in football anymore. This guy just made it so much worse.
Which jersey was he wearing?
He was not a footballer. If he ever played football, I'd be very surprised.
It wasn't Keezy then, was it?
He's waited a long time to say that.
Just on the righty thing. I, of course, in the immediate aftermath, I was a little bit upset. But then I also realized that that he was precisely like I am. I mean, there's no difference between me and him.
You know what was happening, didn't you? And he's coming towards you, you know what's happening.
Yeah. And honestly, that's been put to bed, you know, immediately after, you know, that for me, it's nothing. But I kind of really, honestly, I really enjoyed playing against Ridey. And looking back, he's probably one of my favorite opponents. Mm-hmm. And he will claim that he never scored against me, and I will also put that to bed because he scored an absolute cracker in the Charity Shield. One of them where you go like that and you know it's in. And you have two choices, you know. Either you just let it happen and just be fixed, or you dive and you're going to make it worse for yourself, you know. And I just went, I stood and... Then he could sort of...
By the way, on Charity Shield, I've got something. Remember we were talking the other day about how many penalties you saved and you couldn't remember? I think I found another one you saved.
David Seaman.
Correct.
Yeah, but they don't count.
Didn't they?
No, open play.
Oh, you're talking open play. I was just thinking the other day.
I take no pleasure from that because John Jensen scored and I'm waiting for him. And he miskicks a ball. It's honestly, it's so funny. He tells me afterwards, he was so nervous. And he had this plan. And as he's walking up, taking his steps up to the ball, he forgot his plan. He had no idea. And he's looking at me. I just stood there. And then he miskicks the ball. And you know, you know with a miskick.
You weren't laughing, were you?
I love
that. I was
stories.
Not laughing about that. My God. I mean, saving for David was all right, you know. It was. It would have been great had John Jensen not scored. Yeah. But
just to complete the answer as to how different United are now, they were more prepared to take risks when you were in goal. A different sort of football to that which they play now.
Yes, I think again, it is. It's something I see in football now. No. And something I don't see in football anymore. Yeah. So I think it's not a Manchester United thing. It really is a generational thing where the way that...
Or is it a foreign coach thing?
I think...
Influence in the Premier League.
I think it could be a combination of a lot of things. But it's definitely also I think it's a generational thing more than anything. Because it's a mentality. Mm-hmm. So I come into this Manchester United squad. I come in, you know, early 90s. Up until that point, football was a way to survive. You had loads of people in there. That was our opportunity in life. They probably wouldn't make enough money to get through life, but it was an opportunity to do something. And they were fighting tooth and nail to do that. Mm. And they were
next. I was one of them.
But
that was my generation.
But this, I came into this. I loved it, absolutely. Mm. I used to go and watch Stockport County play. I lived not far from it. And you come into Stockport County Stadium, and everybody, I'm not saying all the players live just around the stadium, but a few players did. And you sit there and you speak to the people there. There weren't that many people in the stand. Yeah, this guy is coming through and he's just from down the road. All this local thing, you know, football became an opportunity to survive, really, or a means to survive and possibly learn new skills, getting, you know, opportunities after that. But in there was the element of survival. I need my bonuses.
Correct. Absolutely.
So we are 1-0 down and I need my bonuses. So now we're gonna, you know, throw it in there and you were fighting to get this point. Today in football, when you're 16 years of age, there's a lot of players making more money than the best paid player in my time. And that makes a little bit of a difference to their mentality. And there's nothing negative about that. It's just the way it is. And then I think maybe the change with foreign coaches in the more tactical bit, and we do it in a different way. And I've come across a lot of coaches that they are incredibly stubborn in how football is supposed to get played or supposed to be played. And I don't understand the lack of flexibility. And
I was going to say, how you sit with people who to continually say he plays football the right way?
Yeah, no.
What's that all about?
I can tell you what, I've played football many, many times the wrong way.
Yeah, me too. There is no right way.
And
there are many ways.
I'll give you a good example. We played the treble season 99. Mm. I'm going to throw this in now because I have a book out.
Did you know that? I know you have a book out. Yeah. I am waiting with bated breath because he's already teased me about a tale in the book. And I have courteously not asked him what the story is, Andrew. I'm happy to buy the book and find out when it's published. When's the book out? When's the book out?
September, end of September.
Called
One.
Brilliant. Right. Brilliant. Great title.
But I've had to look back. I mean, it's not... Of course, there's a lot of football in that. It's very much a travel through my life and my father's life, and the whole basis of the book is me, middle age, and a big question: why? You know, I'm 9 years old. I'm saying to my mother, I want to play for Man United and I want to win an FA Cup final at Wembley with Man United, and she's looking at me. I don't even know what she knew what I was saying. I'm not sure she knew the words, you know, but I said that and it was in my head all the time. This is what I want. So my question is, why? Why can someone in Copenhagen, a suburb of Copenhagen, say that and then end up achieving it? So what is it? So I've had to look at my family and my upbringing, everything. It's been an interesting travel for myself. Mm. And as a starting point, that was the only thing it was supposed to be for me. But of course, when you do something like we did in 99, winning the treble, you're also having to look back at how could this happen? Where did we separate ourselves from the pack? So everyone talks about the big games, you know, Villa Park, Arsenal semi-finals, you know, the Juventus, the Inter games, the last game, Tottenham. I fail to remember many of the Premier League games, if I'm completely honest. But then I'm thinking, everyone forgets that I think at the end of January, we played Charlton away. We're not having any joy. We win that game 1-0. Dwight York scores in the last minute on a cross from Scholesy, who... He's had the ball. I think Gary Neville's overlapped him and gets back and the ball goes in the box. Yorkie hits it in. But in this time, in this period, we're just piling on the pressure. We're just adding people to the attack more and more. So what we're going to do, we don't know this at this time, but we're trying to win the game, not to draw the game, but we're risking losing it. Mm. So when you do your accounts at the end of the day and you see that you win this Premier League by 1 point to Arsenal, and you go back and you think, whoa, Charlton, we won with 1 point. Had we drawn that game, we wouldn't have won. We wouldn't have won. But we chased that extra 2 points. We chased that win. And that is something I don't see very often in today's football anyway.
Risk, reward. It's a long answer, but it got people, me where I wanted you to go because it's a...
You know me well enough to know that.
That's fine.
Safe football is very much a thing these days.
Moments. When you got chipped in the final, keepers know, and the ball comes back off the bar.
Champions League final, Bayern Munich hits a post.
For 2-0.
It does. The chip hits a post.
Post.
Yeah. No, Janka hits a bar.
Are you thinking?
I know the Janka one was definitely not in. No, I knew the Janka one that hits a bar.
Right.
Yeah. I knew for sure it wasn't going to go in.
Hits the bar, man. It couldn't have been closer.
But think about that, you know. Think about the bar's that thick.
Yeah.
So I'm now showing 3 inches.
Yeah.
The football is like that. In order for that ball to get you, that needs to be so much further down.
But you knew that.
I know that. I know that's... I don't know how... I know it's not going
computes
in.
Computes it quickly.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
But, you know, that you know, the chip the chip was different. The chip was...
Is that why you turned around ready to catch it?
I had a suspicion that it would hit the post, but I was more... I was worried that it was going to go in. But we're talking about... That is precisely it. Here we are. We're 1-0 down and we're risking everything. I actually have a whole chapter called Risk Mode where I go into detail about this. Mm. But we have committed people forward. you know, we are gambling on you know, that the guys, me, Stam, if Gary's back or Dennis is back or Ronnie is back, that we can deal with whatever they throw at us. That's another example. Effenberg cuts in. It's easy for him to cut in because there's only, I think there's one defender there, but he's just pushed a little bit to the side, which gives me a little angle to close a goal down a little bit. That means I can then, when I can close a goal down, I can move forward a bit, right? I'm risking being chipped, of course. And I don't think he's trying to chip, but he's hitting it high, and I just get my fingers to it. But you do that, and it was calculated. This was something, it was part of our plan, but it was never formulated.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing it by instinct, by having done it year after year after year. And you just become better and better. And you get to trust your players.
Mm.
And that's why you can do that. But it's definitely a mentality that comes from...
Right, I've always wanted to ask, and I'm not sure if I asked York, even he's been here, but I'll ask you, because you would be more aware of it. York would just be away in the moment. He would just be... When you equalise... against Bayern Munich. You equalise in what, the 91st minute? Something
yeah, he's the board's gone up, so we've passed the 90th minute. The right. board has gone on.
The board has gone up. Yeah, it's like first goal. So then most teams, most clubs would be saying, right, get back in, get set, take extra time, we'll sort this out, we'll beat them in extra time. But that team, I don't think, did that. It didn't have that mentality. It seemed to me that not only did you equalise, it looked to me as if you all felt we can win this.
Mm.
Before, was that the case?
I can't speak for anybody else than myself there. So I'm running back. I always felt that we would get a chance.
Right.
I always felt that. I never thought that we'd lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
You could sense they were protecting more and more. And, you know, my instinctive experience, if you like, with this team was... that was probably the wrong thing to do with us. Because don't give us the initiative, because we have players who out of nothing can score a goal. And we've seen that in the run-up to this final quite a few times, actually. So once we scored that goal, I'm running back and I'm deliberately running quickly because I know how long the celebration will be. So when I get back, I get time to compose myself. And all I'm thinking now is... get your pulse down. We're going into, can't remember, silver goal, golden goal, something like that. That was, so silver goal.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Yes,
it wasn't in.
Yeah, I tell you.
What, was it?
It may have been.
Oh, for the same, for extra time, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, for right. extra time.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, I hadn't thought
so
about
I'm
that.
Thinking, I have never played with this rule, never. And I'm thinking about the final in 96, that I don't want to be the guy that loses us that game. So yeah, I now need to compose myself.
Thinking you're going to extra time.
I'm thinking we're going to extra time here. So I'm getting myself right. And as I'm doing this, we score again.
As he's doing this, he looks up and he's back four and nowhere to be seen.
We score again.
Amazing.
I'm like, whoa.
It was remarkable.
Yeah, you were there that day, weren't you?
I was there working for Talk Radio in those days, I've rarely witnessed anything on a football, and I've seen United win games that they should never have done, and in the third half, and Sheffield Wednesday know that well.
Very well.
What an listen. I mean, I could sit here and do this all day, and we can't. But just bring this full circle. In order to escape the pressure and football, what did you do, and where did you go?
So. I when I came to Manchester, I always had my family. I had my kids, I tried to be a normal father, have a normal family life. And of course, you play on a Saturday night or Saturday afternoon, the kids will go to bed, so you can't use them as an excuse. So, you want me to say I drank a lot?
No, I don't. I want you to say I went to my music room.
Yeah, I did. I had a music room in my garage, and it was. I went there ever so often and, you know, realized it's now 6 o'clock in the morning. I've spent 8 hours out there. Just took me away from the world. And no one ever interrupted me there.
No.
I had no phone or nothing out. And then that was this one day, the knock on the door, and it was my my then wife. She said, "Oh, you got to come and watch this. You got to come and watch this." And I'm like, I haven't the faintest idea what's happening. I come in, and I see this Kevin Keegan interview with you. Where he says, "I would love it."
Oh no, no, I know my.
That's the only time I was ever interrupted out there. I would love it.
That was Monday Night and, Football, wasn't
and
it?
And that night, you knew you were winning the title, didn't you?
If I have to be very, very honest here, I always thought we were going to win it because I just, you know, when you play in that team, you don't see many defeats in that team. We come through. A very, very long period of a lot of injuries, key players. We were always slow starters, but for some reason, once we got up to Christmas time, we started to sort of pluck away. And once we got into this pluck away mode, we just seemed to be unbeatable, regardless of who we put out. Yeah. And I could see what Kevin had created with Newcastle was incredible. It was beautiful football. It was so exciting to watch. But it was also very risky football, and they would get caught. They would play. I'm just saying, a Coventry on their day, and they wouldn't get through. They wouldn't be able to score. And once they didn't score, there was always a risk.
Coventry's a good team. Most people beat Coventry.
One of the regrets. I would have loved to have seen that Newcastle side, to coin a phrase, win a title. I think they deserved it. Kevin deserved it. They royally entertained, which would mean you had one less, but there we are. I'm sorry. Final question.
What kind of a thing is that?
That's terrible, I know.
After sitting
here for 40 minutes.
I mean, how many medals do you want? You don't begrudge one. Surely you can have one back and say, there you go, lads, have that.
That was a magnificent one. That was one of the best they have.
Last question.
Catching them like that.
Where did the star come from?
The star? Or the jump? I had the pleasure of the other day sat in our canteen in PN watching handball.
We weren't that enthused.
I also had this. I got the slight impression that you didn't understand the game. Trying to explain it to you now would probably be a waste of your time.
We do understand the game. One team scores, and then the other team goes down the other end and scores, and it's whoever scored the last goal when time's out that wins.
We were just remarking to me that we hardly ever saw a goalkeeper make a save in handball.
Yes, that's fair.
And you said nonsense. So we wondered the star, because then you told us you played handball. So we then think, because handball goalkeepers jump like that, like a big star, we wondered if that's where
it originated. Martin O'Neill has taught as well. Good work, Poirot. Yes, very good.
Yes. So did it originate there?
Yes, so when I was a kid, football was always my priority, but we could not play all year because of the weather. So when the weather got really bad, our team played handball. Because we played two years together, every second year we had a goalkeeper and every second year we didn't. So that I then went in goal, and the other year I was outfield. And outfield, that's also, the throwing comes from there.
Very good point.
So what do you have? So I know you didn't see a single save there.
But to be fair, we only watched it for an hour and a half.
I was going to say we watched it nearly as long as we were out the other night, but there we are.
if a goalkeeper saves in handball and it goes out, in football it would be a corner, but it's not a corner if the goalkeeper touches it. So what you have a big net behind the goal, so the ball will always be there. So as soon as someone's shooting, I'm either saving and catching or touching, so go wide, I will very quickly get the ball, and then my wingers will be up there, and you go counter. So that was some earnest, because you played with the same guys in football, and don't forget, we're small guys. Mm-hmm. We were like 10, 12, 14 years of age. We kind of did a lot of the same things, because handball is that kind of game. It's very, very quick. It's very, and it's not that easy to score a goal. If you're up against a great...
What? If you're up against... Just throw it at the goal and it's in.
It's
I don't want to insult any... I don't want to insult anyone, but... And I'm... And since I know you will, you don't know who played in that game we watched. I do. I'll just say that the quality of that was probably not the best.
Okay.
So when you get to the top level, it's incredible to watch. It's
we'll very need to watch further.
Right. So and let me just stick that in here now. You know, we are, Denmark are defending world champions. So we have not only the best goalkeeper, we also have the best players in the world. You need your goalkeeper to win a game, a save rate at around 40%. So that's a lot of shots saved. 40%.
That's a lot of shots. That's 40% more than I saw.
You were very
unlucky.
You have 8% more than I saw. The only game in the history of handball where it was 0%.
That's where the start came from. And obviously, we have to reveal the identity of the footballer who's...
Who, the World Cup winner?
The World Cup winner.
I was looking at who won the World Cup in the early 70s.
Oh, that's what you've been doing, is it?
I didn't say 70s. I just said that he...
He was paid in the 70s.
He was England.
It was England. I said that. I was going to say, I bet he was English because it was 1966. He played in 66. So who would it have been who got first paid in Denmark? Who went to Denmark from about 66? I said, you should know that. You're English.
It'll be George Cohen or Ray Wilson.
None of them.
Oh, great.
Big.
Jack Charlton.
No, not. He might have gone at some point as well. I'm not completely sure. Yeah.
Bobby Moore.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was the first player ever to get paid in Denmark.
You should be ashamed of yourself, Richard Keane. Yes.
You're right.
I would have got that from being Scottish.
I have had so much fun. I can't tell you. I mean, your company during this period of time, Peter, anyway, but this opportunity...
Yes, it's been great.
...has been brilliant.
And Denmark are still there.
Yeah.
Denmark-England semi-final.
You're Scottish, aren't you?
Yes.
So why would you go along that road? They're playing the Ukraine. You know, you read the English media now.
The best will in the world. Yeah. I know that if England turn up, they beat Ukraine.
Yeah, I would agree.
I'll go back to the original. Denmark, England, you fancy that the same?
But it's just, I spoke to my son yesterday, right? And I don't do anything. I don't teach him anything. He's a grown man. But I still just wanted to, without asking him directly, just gain the mood. Mm-hmm. Do you know how difficult this game is going to be against the Czech Republic? Have you any idea? And they know.
No, this was a question to Casper.
They know. They absolutely know. We're not getting ahead of ourselves. I think this is going to be the most difficult game. Most difficult game that we will have in this Euro. If it's going to be the last one, it could be the last one. No. Then so be it, because we will then leave the tournament having played a very similar team to ourselves, very well organized. Yeah. Patrick Schick up front, 4 goals already.
Yeah.
It's a very impressive team. I know, and I wanted to make sure that they are not thinking about this as an easy game, thinking about playing England in the talking about the Wembley pitch or blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And they don't. And it makes me happy. They focus on this game.
Thank you again, Peter. The book is out next month, did you say?
September 30th.
September 30th.
One.
Called One.
Aptly called One.
Keys and Gray is available via whichever podcast platform you download from.
Yes, and if you have Alexa, just ask for it.
There you go. I'm aware. There's nothing else for me to say, is there?
Can you get it on Alexa? Just shout
Keys
and Gray.
Can you Smooth Jazz Florida. Brilliant. See you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.